We're studying Virgo. We didn't get very far last time. We got one paragraph last time. This is that we said that Virgo is the beginning of all prophecy, and it's all the core of all myth and all prophecy and all stars and all scriptures. It's Genesis 3:15. Spoken to the serpent. I will put enmity between thee and the woman, and between thy seed and her seed, and it shall bruise thy head, and thou shalt bruise his head. I talked a great deal about how the first thing that John the Baptist said, and how, first of all, we talked about that John the Baptist was a real muckety-muck dude. There was only four Nazarites from birth in the entire history of Israel. His father was a high order of the priesthood, and all Israel knew him and were interested in him, and they all came, all Israel, all Judah came to be baptized of him between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. And what he told them, the ones that were there in need and openness, he baptized willingly. The ones that were there out of curiosity, he called them the son of the snake. So the first thing that has to happen in any kind of a beginning process of the study of the stars is that you have to see that you are the son of the serpent, that your mind is the wicked one, the evil one. And then if you can accept that, then we can move on to the circle of the stars or the book of the stars. Remember?
Was Samuel one?
Anybody?
Yeah, three.
Did anybody?
Jeremiah.
No.
Daniel. John.
There's somebody.
Samson. Samuel.
I knew that.
Isaiah.
No. Look it up. Remember, we're looking. You want the four Nazarites from birth. I mean, this is like a simple assignment, right? I mean, you're a big like science person, teacher, guy that gives homework.
Yeah.
This is like a simple assignment.
I even got it on the computer.
I got the third one. You get the fourth.
All revelation in the heavens, and the mystery of the stars, and all revelations in the Torah, the law, the writings of the prophets, all the revelations in the New Testament, and the Talmud, and the Midrash, and the Zohar, in fact, in all of life, is designed to unfold and develop this path, this mystery of the relationship between the seed of the woman and the seed of the serpent. It lies at the root of all ancient traditions and mythologies, which are simply perversions and corruptions of that one primitive truth. Virgo is represented as, let's get your star maps up. Okay, let's find Virgo and stand her right side up. So the centaur, with the horse with the spears at the bottom right-hand corner. Can everybody see Virgo now? Okay, we're gonna look at some of these brightnesses, the degree of brightness of some of these stars. We're gonna look at her position in the sky with relationship to these other things, and we're gonna see if we can get a handle on. This is the difficult part of the star map without actually being out there and watching it, or without having this an observatory program to show this, because the mystery of it is the stars are like the alphabet, which just look like when you look at a Hebrew without, when it's just Hebrew writing, looks like a bunch of gibberish. It has no vowel points even to the Hebrews. That's what the stars look like. It's just a bunch of gibberish. But the wandering stars, the five planets and the sun and the moon, the seven, as they move through the heavens, they cause the alphabet of the stars to be understood. And the story, the full story is told, really it's told every night, but the full, all the mystical and the subtleties of the full story are told in a year's time. Whereas the Torah takes 3 years to go through, the mystery of the Book of the Stars, it takes 1 year to go through. But in order to fully comprehend it, you have to be lying there and watching where the planets are in relationship to the signs. So I'm just saying we can't study that right now because we can't see movement of the planets and the stars, I mean the planets and the sun and the moon, in a flat piece of paper. But prayerfully, you can imagine what this would look like in an observatory with the ability to program the movement of the sun and the stars and the moon and the planets through the heavens as it told the story. It would be...
Is that all you... I want to trivialize. Is that all you need, though, is to be able to move the planets around in the observatory? So, like I called Dallas...
Well, you need the ecliptic.
Yeah, that's what I mean. But you just have
you need, no, you need the ecliptic, which shows the movement of everything around the North Pole.
Yeah.
And then you need the movement of the stars.
Right.
Okay. There's three things you need. There's three components to change. Actually, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, there's 7 components, 8 components of change. There's 7 components of change.
I mean, is it feasible for a planetarium to do this?
Oh, yeah. We could, in fact, if we had any money, what we were going to do when we made a proposal to take over the Biblical Arts Center and recreate the tabernacle in the wilderness with lasers and holography. And then one of the things was going to, part of it was going to be that we would have an observatory in adjacent to it or over the top so that you'd show that. Long story, let me just give you a 2-second summary. Do you know what IMAX cameras are? And they have, that's where they have the Omni theaters where it's mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, we had conceived of, we'd go to the Sinai and shoot the stars and shoot the location of where the tabernacle was established. And we'd have the tabernacle built and it will be all enclosed so that when you close the unit, it would recreate the sights, the sounds, even the smells, would be totally environmentally right of what it was like for Israel on the Sinai. And then it would show all of the offerings through holography, including the slaughter of the sheep and everything. And then it would show the mystery of the Shekinah glory and the appearance of God in the. And then it would show at night, you turn the lights out, and then you would see the mystery of the stars and the heavens over the place of the tabernacle. But it would cost about $50 million.
I was going to say, you can sell tickets to that.
It could be the biggest attraction in the world.
A little less. It would cost a little less than Detroit and gets paid for playing football.
We'll have a bank sale raise the money.
Anyway, we got a proposal, and it's really hot.
You have it put together.
The other thing that would be cool would be the planetarium would be to take Ursa Major, for instance, and change it into
the bear
so you can see it and do it with that really neat illustration technique that they used on the maps.
Yeah,
know,
we'd do it
with Columbus or something.
We pull out by programming each of, as we talked about it, we'd show right. Each of these.
And then when you're finished, put them all up.
Yeah.
Let what was just stars in the beginning change into this incredible Leonardo kind of painted Sistine.
It could be the greatest thing since white bread.
Right here.
Anyway, you got Virgo. Now, all Virgo is represented as the woman with the branch in her right hand. See the branch? And ears of corn or wheat in her left hand. See that? And why in the hell that?
Huh?
Why is this stupid woman standing around with a branch in one hand and ears of corn or wheat in her left hand?
And how did she get up there?
The name of the sign in Hebrew is Bethula, which means a virgin. In Arabic, it means a branch, the name of the sign. The two words are connected as in Latin, Virgo, which means virgin, and Virga, which means a branch. Go to Isaiah 11:1. I'm going to have you go this, so somebody needs to be ready to read. You got it?
Turn it up.
It's a sign. Go ahead.
It's a sign from heaven. There shall come forth a rod out of the stem of Jesse, and a branch shall grow out of his roots. And the Spirit of the Lord shall rest upon him, the Spirit of wisdom and understanding, the Spirit of counsel and might, the Spirit of knowledge and of fear of the Lord.
Okay. What the hell does that mean? All of a sudden we're reading the Torah. And there shall come forth a rod out of the stem of Jesse, and a branch shall grow out of his roots. We all accept it. We all heard he's a branch. We sing the songs about him being a branch. What does it mean? In Genesis, the Virgo is presented as only a woman. Remember the prophecy? The woman, the seed of the woman, shall bruise the head of the seed of the serpent. So she's just simply a woman. Now, as the book of as the scriptures progress, more information is given about her. It progressed from a woman to a woman that must be of the seed of Abraham, that must be of the stock of David, the stock of Israel, that must be of the line of David and the tribe of Judah. So the revelation beginning is wide, and that's what happens in us. And pretty soon the path gets narrower and narrower, and just as her description narrows who she could possibly be. You got it?
That's wild. Narrows down to one silly little girl.
One stupid little girl. Now go to Isaiah 7, verse 14.
Amazing. Therefore the Lord himself shall give you a sign. Behold, a virgin shall conceive and bear a son, and shall call his name Emmanuel.
Okay. Emmanuel means God within us. It's a hell of a name. First of all, the idea of can you imagine in tribal society, a virgin bearing a child? And there's no question the name, you get in modern religion, they say, wow, that really doesn't, that word is just, it means a young woman. No, it doesn't, it means a virgin. Now, what possible thing could have transpired if this were not God inspired that would cause some idiot to come along and say, behold, a virgin's going to become pregnant? Nonsensical. It's a non sequitur. And then for it to come true, and this is the critical issue of how you argue with cult guys and these idiots. Why did Christ have to be born of a virgin? This is basic first grade theology of our doctrine. Had to be clean, that's one reason.
But there couldn't be a question that it could be somebody else's son.
The bloodline comes from the Father in a birth. And Jesus had to have the Father's blood.
I've been told that, but Paul and Ben both have shared blood type.
But the type isn't the bloodline.
Ah, that's it. Okay. You're talking about.
I'm talking about the sang real, the royal blood.
That's what I was.
The determining factor comes from you.
Okay.
Anybody else want to talk about or know a reason why Christ had to be born of a virgin?
Prophecy.
The old prophecy. But why? What?
Sin goes through here.
Well, we'll develop that more. That's one of the things that we'll see in all of these other little sidelights. All right, go to Matthew 1:23. You stay in Isaiah.
Oh, you stay in Isaiah.
I'm the Isaiah guy.
Yeah, you're the Isaiah guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm the authority.
Where are we going?
I'm there.
Okay, Matthew 1:23. Read it.
Behold, a virgin shall be with child and shall bring forth a son, and they shall call his name Emmanuel, which being interpreted is God with us.
Okay, so that's the fulfillment of the prophecy. The angel said the prophecy of Isaiah would be fulfilled in Mary. Got it? All right, now, in Isaiah 9, it's difficult to separate the virgin and her seed in the prophecy, in this prophecy. So go to Isaiah 9, read verses 6 and 7.
For unto us a child is born, unto us the son is given, and the government shall be upon his shoulders. His name shall be called Wonderful, Counselor, Mighty God, the Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace. Of the increase of his government and peace there shall be no end. Upon the throne of David and upon his kingdom to order and to establish it with judgment and with justice from henceforth even forever.
Okay. So, unto us a child is born from someplace. I mean, so it doesn't go into the... But in order for the child to have met those prophecies, he had to be born of a woman, and that's what we'll see. And that was fulfilled. Read Luke 1, 32 and 33. Okay. You're supposed to be the New Testament guy.
Okay, well, may I ask?
Always listen to what you're saying.
Okay.
The bloodline had to be through the woman, right?
No, the bloodline was the royal blood. The blood, the DNA had to be through the man.
The male always determines the sex of the child.
I know, but if the father, came down and was into her, I don't know what that would have to do with.
So that Jesus would have royal blood. The blood of God, the blood that came from outside. Right. So his blood in the flesh came from the Father. Now there's a great, we can spend all day doing it one time, that show you that the entire universe is made of the blood of God. But there's something unique that transpired, that it was necessary for the blood in Christ to be from this mystery of God's DNA. But it had to be made flesh, so it had to take on the characteristics of the woman, too.
And it was from the line of David.
Right. Well, no, she was from the line of David.
Right.
Yeah.
Flesh lines from David.
Is this translation just short a word here in Matthew versus Emmanuel means God with us? Did you say one ago it means God within us?
Yeah. In Greek, the way that the words are translated, it can mean either God with us or God within us. Okay, like it's if you look in the word studies or the language, it can mean either one. All right.
There's something there about I can't put in words, but there's something about the way God came fulfilled that God within us. The way God came into Israel. If Joseph and Mary had copulated, then God would have had to somehow impose himself on the child.
Man would have had to have kept the law with the help of the Holy Spirit.
Yeah, that's what it would be. That's what it would be. As opposed to God
fulfilling
God became man.
Right.
Through the woman. The vessel was the woman. But God, that's how God entered into the world.
That's right.
As a being.
That's right.
With a body.
And there's
otherwise it's just painting something on top of flesh and saying, okay, do your best.
Yeah. And it puts us in the position where we would have had to have been this best and the highest if he hadn't become man.
And it was something we could attain.
Right. If it was the creme de la creme could have attained it. The best of man could have attained it.
So he had to come through a certain line of blood.
Right. And from the woman too, him. Yeah.
Because that's why the seed was constantly protected, right?
And he was...
But that's the seed.
But that's the mystery. Well, there's a whole... The mystery, I know, but the mystery of the relationship between blood and sperm is one we, modern science still doesn't understand. And the idea of what is the DNA, what effect does the bloodline have on the DNA and the chromosomes? I mean, that's in effect what has happened. In us, Christ has been cloned. What cloning is a stupid, vain shadow of what the mystery of God is, of Christ in us, the hope of glory. But he's been cloned in a way that's unique, in that his spirit and character have entered into the human race in a way that is beyond science and is beyond our comprehension. Now, just the idea that God could impregnate Mary is beyond our comprehension. We can't understand that.
But after that, it's God in man.
Right, but after that, it's Christ in you, the hope of glory. And so there is a mystery that took place with the sperm of God and the bloodline of God that we don't understand yet.
It's just as mystical and magical that Mary should become impregnated as it is that Christ is resonant within each of us.
Right.
But still, it was necessary for the Spirit of God to, at Pentecost,
right,
or the Holy Spirit.
Right.
Why is that?
Because Christ would have been only one then. He would have been alone.
Oh.
I mean, now he went, it's the idea that, remember I said that he was the first pecan, in that analogy. He fell into the ground and died. Another pecan tree grew. On the day of Pentecost, the pecan tree was shaken, and now the whole earth is filled with pecans. And each person runs around and tries to be a good pecan, tries to get it right. And what the intent is that that pecan falling to the ground lose its identity and become a new thing. Behold, all things are new.
It's like the DNA of man, the flesh DNA, can mutate and become all these ugly things, and yet God's DNA is perfect,
right,
and it can't mutate.
Right. So
it's only it.
And that's why, right, that's why Christ said that only that which came from eternity can return to eternity.
So what God had created with Adam and Eve was something completely different.
He was just that was as we talked about last night. It was of the earth. Therefore, it is of the earth. It's made of the earth. Therefore, it's of the earth. Earthy. The last Adam is of heaven, and therefore he's heaven.
So before the virgin birth, all there was to Adam and thereafter, or between that, was just a hope, just a promise, a word.
Yeah, and that's what the star story is about, is that hope and that promise.
And that's why John goes into how the Word was God and God was...
Right. The thing that you said about in all the stories of the Old Testament where, you know, God wiped out every man, woman, and child without regard to innocence or not innocence. Or in what we studied this morning, that Esau, or Jacob have I loved, but Esau have I hated before they even yet were born. All of it has to do with the protection of that mystery of the bloodline, the mystery of the sperm. Because the vessel, in order for Christ to have fulfilled all the mystery here that we'll talk about, had to be of the tribe of the seed of Abraham. Mystery. Because that's who the contract was made from. The blood contract was made with.
That's why it was still intact by the time Gabriel came to
him. Right.
In the same way that God walked with Abraham in the...
Right, so it had to go to the seed of Abraham, the contract, because that's who he made the contract with, to Abraham and his tribe.
Yeah.
So we had to be of the tribe of Abraham.
Yeah.
And then we become that by faith. We become, because by the empowerment, because first of all, it cost us everything to become that. But he is no fool to give up that which he never owned, to gain that which he can never lose.
So Mary was his entry into, that was his entry into the tribe of Abraham.
Yeah, but you got to hear this, it's even more wild. That was his entry in order that he might fulfill the terms of the contract he made with Abraham.
That's probably us getting lost.
Yeah, it all has to come back to that point, that contract. That's why there's no such thing as an Old and New Testament. There's the old meaning that it was the type, and the new meaning is the fulfillment of the type.
The focus of the church is that, you know, the Christ was murdered, but he had, in a sense, he had to die.
He had to die.
You know, that, you know,
because nobody met the terms of the contract. So God had to die. That's why I had fun when, back in the 70s, when I first became a believer, there was the great, the statements all over, God was dead. And I said, you're right, God was dead, but he's resurrected. But you can't see God as alive unless you see him as resurrected. Otherwise, you'll make him your God, and if you make him your God, you'll end up being the God of him. Peace. And that's why it's, we are studying the, I mean, it sounds ludicrous to say we're studying the mystery of the stars, but as the vehicle to study the very simple basics of the doctrine. The other groups are using other vehicles to study the basics between now and Passover.
I have kind of a side question. At the time,
which side, Abraham, right or left?
I don't know. The time of Abraham, how there were the, you know, the different pagan groups or whatever. I mean, was it, could they be like considered Gentiles if they had gotten the word, or if they had heard the promise or the word?
They repented.
Even though they weren't of the tribe, then that was, then they too can maybe resurrect if they.
Right. That's why it says Jesus went and preached to those that were in prison, that they may be judged by man according to the flesh, but live by God according to the Spirit.
So that even though that it was during Abraham's time and all they had was the hope, but that was the same kind of hope
it's
as
we're in the same the position.
Roman, that Roman guard had.
And the same hope we have.
Gotcha.
That's why it says the gospel was preached unto Abraham. Galatians 3, verse 8 says that. That blows away Baptists.
But they, in a they sense, dismiss we have it better, though, don't we?
Well,
for the knowledge, because
yeah, but the problem is that we have the potential to have it better because it's the days of Messiah. But because it's the days of Messiah, the revelation has been taken from the stars and from the world and from the scriptures and from everything. So it's much more difficult. And stop and think that in the temple times, when they were doing these massive sacrifices, the ones in every generation, there were those that saw it as Christ. They watched the mystery unfold in Leviticus and all the feasts. They watched it. They participated in it. And so it became one with them. That's why it says there are many, there's a great cloud of witnesses who, by the mystery of God, he said, they could not be made perfect without us. And so that's what they're waiting. But they, the thing that I want to say to you is all of those great cloud of witnesses from these ancient times understood this mystery. Because this mystery is written about extensively in Ezekiel, in Jeremiah, in Lamentations, in Job, in the book of Revelation. Okay? Everybody understand?
I don't know why, but this the stuff we've been reading about Jesus and John and stuff, for some reason John is much more foreground to me than ever before. And with this thing you said about the creme de la creme, if Christ had not been born of a virgin, like John was the creme de la creme.
Yeah, John.
John was it. Yeah. John was the end. He was the ultimate. He was the end. He was
like
the ultimate.
Best man could be.
Right. Nothing could have been better in the flesh than John.
Than John the Baptist.
And he got his head cut off.
Right. But John, but he couldn't allow that to take place. He would have, as Jesus would have called down 10,000 angels to protect him. If Messiah that he had baptized hadn't fulfilled the prophecies. You see that?
What's starting to get me, though, is like there's something to see. There's really something there to see, and that John, you know, this thing about like John's birth was foretold, or as Isaiah foretold it, you know, and
Malachi foretold
it, and an angel announced it, right? I mean, all these incredible things, and from his birth, from before his birth, he was dedicated to God, and from his birth until the time he died, he didn't break the law, he didn't eat this, he didn't drink that, he didn't cut his hair. It's like John is, I think, what you expect Christ to be. And I wasn't.
There's another interesting aside in that John, the apostle, the young John, was a muckety-muck also. John was of the priesthood, so he was a teenager at the time of Christ, but he had been prepared for the priesthood. And so, from the time of his very earliest beginnings, his father had prepared him to be one of the major priests within the temple. And so that's why he wrote so such when we see it, when we finally understand Revelation, we'll see that John had an intimate knowledge of what was going on in the temple, and that's the other reason that we know that John wrote that before 95 AD, when the world says he did. He wrote it before the temple was destroyed, when mankind still had a chance. Go to the right, the left-hand side, you see the different magnitudes. You can see the level of the first magnitude, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth magnitude, depending on the brightness of the stars.
You know, it's almost like he had to say it, John.
Oh, yeah, that's why Christ couldn't have said, called himself Messiah.
Yeah.
Just like John could not have called himself a prophet. That's another story. The ancient poet, the Arabian, he was ancient time that Paul quote, was his name was Aratus, A-R-A-T-U-S. And he talked about Virgo. Before we get to that, Virgo, note in the what's the holding in your right hand the wheat, or the left hand the wheat, see that it there's a star there that is the first magnitude. Virgo contains a total of 110 stars. Only one of them is of the first magnitude. Six are of the third, 10 of the fourth, etc. Now the ancient poet Aratus says of them, quote, beneath Botes' feet, now find Botes. He's the guy with a sickle. That's right, Belir, just to the immediate left of a right of the Virgin. You see him? A warrior type.
He's considered part of Virgo? It's not part of the 160 stars?
No.
In other words, just Virgo itself has 160.
Right.
Decon.
It's one of the Decons, three Decons. Okay, here's what Aratus said. Beneath Botes' feet, the Virgin seeks, who carries in her hand a glittering something or other. Over her shoulder revolve a star. In the right wing, superlatively bright. It rolls beneath the tail and may compare with the bright stars that deck the greater bear. Upon her shoulders, on bright star is born. One clasps the circling girdle of her loins, one at her bending knee, and her hand glitters that bright and golden ear of corn. Again, I'm not saying that there's necessarily any revelation about Aratus, but I just want you to hear what the ancient poets said about these things. And it's pretty.
The one with Leo's tail.
Huh?
The one over her shoulder, is that the one?
One Leo's tail, right. Leo's tail. Right. And that's the idea that the mystics say that the new star that the Magi followed was not very bright. And because you had to be learned to see the mystery. I mean, it wasn't big and bright, so everybody, oh, look, there's a star. It took humongous amounts of study to see that there was something different that happened in coma.
That's way to the Messiah.
But in the seed, the one star in the branch, in the wheat that she's holding, the seed is brighter. The one star, the magnitude one star is brighter than all the seed. That indicates the seed that's the fulfillment of a promise. And then it goes all the way to the next magnitude one star that's with her, is right, it's at her head, is that in the tail of Leo, the lion, which we'll see that that's the fulfillment of. So the fulfillment is in her head, and she's got the promise in her hand. Do you see what I'm saying? It's pretty neat when you start getting into these subtleties.
With Virgo being the first and Leo being the last, why was it that they had a man's face on the Sphinx?
They didn't have a man's face. That's an illusion. That's just modern idiots say it is. It's the face of a woman.
Yeah.
all the Sphinx, and I saw many, many sphinxes. There's sphinxes all over the Middle East. All of the sphinxes in Egypt have the head of a woman and the body of a lion, I'm telling you. And they are in all the temples. And all of sphinxes in Greece have the head of a woman, the body of a lion, but they have wings on it. So that's why you know whether it's a Grecian sphinx or a Egyptian sphinx. I got Barbara, a sphinx, with the wings on her. So that, I mean, she can always see. The idea of the wings, the reason the wings were added in the Greek is that it added the revelation that what was happening was spirit. Anytime birds were there, it was spirit. Even in the Egyptians, when you see the hieroglyphics, when it was the body of a man with a head of a bird, that meant that it was the man's spiritual life that you were following.
What is it that wink meant? What does that mean?
Seed. It's the bread of earth, the bread of life.
The best. Yeah. Versus the
without it, you die.
Did she marry the virgin that she offered Christ as the first fruit?
No. The virgin is never married, and that's what the Parthenon is in Greece, where Paul made the... It's so wild, but I studied a little bit of mythology in school, and nobody ever told me that the Parthenon, the word Parthenon, it was a temple to the virgin. The whole damn place was this humongous temple to the virgin. It was a temple to Virgo. And so when Paul stood on Mars Hill right below the Parthenon, and I stood on the rock where Paul stood and looked up at the Parthenon, and you talk about major goosebumps. But I could have given his speech. I mean, it was there. Boom. I know that he went into the detail and said, the Parthenon has now finished its course. At the time of Paul, the Parthenon was perfect. It was a great, you can't believe it, how incredible the need it is. Even now it's in ruins. Paul, when he was standing there, said, I know he said this, it's not recorded, but that Parthenon is now fulfilled because it's met its purpose. The virgin has conceived, the virgin has brought forth the King of Kings. Now the Parthenon will die. That's why those societies are dying, is because they're running around trying to reconstruct that which is relics of the past. It served its purpose. And they're idiots. I thought I'd go there and find some like precious souls when I went all over Greece. Fucking idiots. Worshipping icons, kissing icons, and refusing to eat with me because I wouldn't kiss that picture and that idol. I said, you can't believe what I said.
You played gin all night.
Gin all night in a monastery.
Yeah.
Gin?
Yeah. You said that the fulfillment is in her head. What did you mean again?
The other category ones that we just read it in this.
I thought that category one star was in the wheat.
No, but there's another one. See it when it's fulfilled in the tail of Leo. It's right next to her head. Are you looking at it?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Okay, it's in other words, it's at her sight. She can see that that's all finished. That begins in here. It begins with her, and she can see from the other star. The light there is giving the revelation that it's finished.
It's like there's no time dependency.
Right, the Lamb was slain from before the foundation of the world. All right. The brightest star in the wheat thing has an ancient name handed down in all star maps. In Hebrew, it's the name Semek, T-S-E-M-E-C-H, Semek. In Arabic, it's Al-Zimak, which means the branch. This star is the ear in the ear of the corn, and she holds it in her left hand. Its modern Latin name is Spica, which means an ear of corn. Now, this is where it gets interesting, based on the thing that Ed read a minute ago. There are 24 Hebrew names are Hebrew words which are translated as branch. But only one of them is Semek. It is used exclusively of the Messiah, and it occurs only 4 times in the Bible. I mean, stop and think of the odds of this happening. The 24 words that mean branch. First of all, the idea that they talk about the Messiah as a branch, which in its independently, the Messiah, it doesn't make sense to call the Messiah a branch. Because in the New Testament, when he, you know, it's the idea, he is the vine, we are the branches. So you can't make that connection. There's no sense, it's nonsensical, unless you relate it to the stars. Okay, let's go look at these 4. Do you understand what I just said? There are only 4 words. 4 times. There's only one word that is used for Messiah when it's connection with a branch, and it's Semek, Semek, which is the ancient name for this star. Okay, Jeremiah 23, verses 5 and 6. Yeah, why don't you and Harry alternate? Harry, go to Zechariah 9:9.
I already got Jeremiah.
Go to Zechariah 9:9.
Oh. Zechariah after.
Okay, it's Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, 9:9. No, excuse me, 9, Jeremiah 23, 5 and 6.
I forgot what I'm looking
for. 9,
Zechariah 9:9.
Got it. I got them both before Ed.
Ed, would you read Jeremiah and just smack Harry right in the smacker?
Behold, the days come, saith the Lord, that I will raise up unto David a righteous branch, and the king shall reign and prosper, and shall execute judgment and justice in the earth. In these days Judah shall be saved, and Israel shall dwell safely. And this is his name whereby he shall be called, the Lord our righteousness.
Okay. Again, I'll raise up a branch, and the king shall reign and prosper. What the hell does that mean, the branch? Got a branch in your hand. All right. Zechariah 9:9. It's about the king. Now, this we're talking about king here.
Rejoice greatly, O daughter of Zion. Shout, O daughter of Jerusalem. Behold, thy king cometh unto thee. He is just and having salvation. Lowly and riding upon an ass and upon a colt, the foal of an ass.
Okay. Remember, we said that if the Messiah comes and he's happy, he'll come in the clouds. If he's pissed off, he'll come riding on the colt of an ass.
Where does it say that?
It says it all over. We'll get into that. That we study every Passover. Okay, go to Matthew 21. Harry, go to Matthew 21, verse 9.
And the multitudes that went before and that followed cried, saying, Hosanna to the son of David. Blessed is he that cometh in the name of the Lord. Hosanna in the highest.
Okay. And what was the sign that was put over? Huh?
King
Rock? Yeah, what did it mean? King of the Jews.
But when he came in, they laid down branches.
Right. All right. Zechariah 3:8. You're not there yet.
Well, I had to. It's in the Old Testament. It's right here. I turn around to it.
It's in the Z.
I keep turning around to him. It's a sign.
It's a sign.
Hear now, O Israel, the high priest thou, and I hail us and sit before thee. They are men wondered at. For behold, I will bring forth my servant the branch.
Okay. Where's the one about they put the branch to the ground?
All right. Go to Zechariah 6:12. I'll let him go since he's already there. You go to Isaiah 4.
6:12. And speak unto him, saying, Thus speaketh the Lord of hosts, saying, Behold, the man whose name is the branch, he shall grow up out of his place. He shall build the temple of the Lord.
Okay. Okay, read Isaiah 4, verse 1 and 2.
And in that day, 7 women shall take hold of one man, saying, We will eat our own bread and wear our own apparel. Only let us be called by thy name, or take away our reproach. In that day shall the branch of the Lord be beautiful and glorious, and the fruit of the earth shall be excellent and comely for them that are escaped of Israel.
Okay. And that day shall the branch of Yahweh be beautiful and glorious.
You just said that the Hebrew
word, the Hebrew word, that's what the name of that star is. in Hebrew, without anybody knowing that this stuff. And the only time, the word, there are 24 names for the word branch, but only one of them, Semech, is used exclusively of the Messiah, and the word only occurs four times, and that's what you just studied. All right, I'll find the branch. I want to study the nose to the branch. It's the idea they're insulting Messiah. Ezekiel 8:17. Then he said unto me, Hast thou seen this, O son of man? Is it a light thing to the house of Judah that they commit the abominations which they commit here? For they have filled the land with violence, and have returned to provoke me to anger, and lo, they put the branch to the nose. It means you belittle.
That's the Thomas
thing. That's right. You've never given a hot seat with that? This is the 8th chapter of Ezekiel.
That isn't the same thing with the...
No. The branch is Christ, and they are, it's an act of contempt to wipe your nose with the branch. Yeah, that's what we do. The point is, you have to see this is what you do when you think there's something left to do or something wrong. You put the branch to the nose because you believe this idiot Antichrist instead of the revelation. You believe it now instead of what the stars tell you. You believe this great intellect, this wonderful mind that's been so incredibly your friend and so reliable. Not even once, but you believe it. Oh, it's important because I think it. It's not you thinking it. It's the evil one masquerading. Don't put the branch to the nose anymore.
I just realized that I've read that French guy that says, I think therefore I am. I mean, it's always been like, you know, I always thought it was supposed to be this real... Yeah, but I wonder if you meant it the opposite.
Maybe he was right.
No, I mean, to think therefore I am, then maybe he's seen like the difference.
To think therefore I am.
Right. I never looked at it that way before.
You can hear Satan just go, I think therefore I am.
All right, Isaiah 4. Everybody understand? Put the branch to your nose is like to belittle totally Messiah.
Verse 4.
I have a question about
Isaiah 4, verse 2. I'm sorry.
I know we're studying the Virgo, but and then we're going into the ones around her.
We're just studying the branch, the stars that are in the Virgo itself right now. That's all we're studying. We're studying just the figure of the woman and the stars and the meaning of the stars in that woman. All right.
Isaiah 4, 2. In that day shall the branch of the Lord be beautiful and glorious, and the fruit of the earth shall be excellent and comely
okay.
For them that are escaped.
In that day shall the branch of Jehovah be beautiful and glorious. And again, that star is called Zavijaveh, which means the gloriously beautiful. The star Theta in the arm bearing the branch is called in Arabic Al-Muradin, which means who shall come down or who shall have dominion. There's a jillion scriptures we could read about that.
This is in Arabic, right?
Right.
Isn't it sort of funny that...
But the Arabic names...
would be...
No, the Arabic. The only thing the reason it's in Arabic is because the great astronomers studied these ancient documents that went back and back and back and back and back and back. Many of which have now been destroyed, and they gave the Arabic names to that. These were the names in the original language, and they give the Arabic names for those. Yeah. Okay.
I just think that's really.
It is also known as Vindimiatrix, a Chaldean word which means the sun or branch who cometh. Other names of stars in the sign are not identified. I can't find them. One is Subila, which means who carries, in Isaiah 46:4. Another is Al Azal, Azal, the branch, Arabic name for the branch in Isaiah 18, and Subilan in Arabic, the ear of corn, in Isaiah 17:5. Now in the zodiac in the temple of Dendera in Egypt, in one of the rooms of the temple, it's the star map, just like this, on the ceiling. The interesting thing about it is, she, Virgo, is represented with a branch in her hand, but she is ignorantly explained to represent Isis. Her name is called Aspolia, which means an ear of corn in Arabic, or the seed, which shows that though the woman is seen, it is her seed which is the subject of the prophecy. Now, there's all kinds of interesting things that we'll see about these. I wish we had the stuff, but in all these finds that they make, in especially in Egypt, and sometimes in the temples that are in Babylon and elsewhere, what happens is this wild thing, the temple like is dedicated to Taurus, the bull, or no, let's say Capricorn, the goat. And so, but in the stars, it seemed that it couldn't have been dedicated to Capricorn because the stars were drawn at the time that Taurus was, it was the age of Taurus. And so all these jokers did was they had this great, beautiful thing that was up there that they forgot about what it meant. But then they knew it was some priest said, okay, now it's no longer the age of Taurus, it's the age of Capricorn, so they just changed gods. Instead of having a bull that was sacred, they made the goat sacred. But they didn't understand that up there it revealed still the mystery that they were, you know,
worshiping a sign.
Right.
That moves.
And they lost what Abraham had seen. The idea that they could no longer worship the stars. Or the signs of the zodiac, even, because they only could be, they could only worship something
it's only
that's
been for a couple thousand years.
Yeah, they can only worship something that's eternal. Okay, that's a quick and dirty look at Virgo, and the prophecies concerning her and the branch and the sea. No, let's stop there. We'll study Centaurus. He's really interesting because we get to study the spear and the meaning of the spear and the victim.
What is the third decan for Virgo? There's the Koa, the Baptis.
And this is what we're going to study. I just said it, Centaurus. Okay? That's enough for tonight. Anybody have any thoughts? Or?
I just wanted to tell you that last Tuesday when we were here for Goddess Day, and I was carrying Paul around, I went to the back and there was a box of Russell Stover candies back there on Pal's desk. And when I was a little girl, the absolute best candy I ever had was a Russell Stover's. It had that raspberry Rubik stuff inside. And it was just, I mean, I remember.
So you stole some candy
from it was just the best. And I stole it out of the box. And I ate it.
What silly punishment be?
Did you get sick and die?
And on the way home, I was thinking, you know, that candy did not taste as good as I remember it tasting. And then I realized that not only do my negative memories, are they not accurate, but what I perceive as my positive memories are not accurate. And then I realized that every day could genuinely be new because right. I didn't have to draw on anything. And absolutely everything could be brand new. Then I thought, well, I'm going to have to call Palin to tell him I stole his candy.
It wasn't even his candy, it was Barbara's candy.
It's been real important to me lately, like, to see when the evil one comes to dating. That's been a big thing last. Seems to, like a knockout punch.
No, you don't have to play that game, because when you see through, that's why I didn't really make that, close this loop. But when you see through the name and the naming, And it literally castrates the Antichrist, the evil one. He has no power.
Because you have dominion.
You've taken dominion over the soul. Because you've castrated the names. And it's really wild. Yeah. And then, and again, I can't even emphasize this enough. Then what happens? With the act of how you, what the process is of really getting around him, of having like the secret stuff going on he can't get to, is when you speak in tongues. It drives the Antichrist insane. Because when you pray in tongues, that's the purpose. Your mind can't manipulate it.
And can't take credit for it.
Is it possible that you can pray in tongues when you're alone?
Sure.
But when you're in, because the other night I didn't know, it's like I just said I wanted to.
Sure, just pray for it. God.
I was lying in bed and it's like I wasn't saying anything, but I felt like on the inside I was.
You think in tongues.
And it was really wild.
Yeah.
It's like Satan's gray area.
it just blows him away. He can't stand it. Because you're having direct communication with the Holy Spirit,
think out everything, you know?
And there's no possibility of the evil one having anything to do with it.
Yeah, because all your focus is like it's in this one direction.
So anyway, I would pray that each of you pray for tongues. Not forget all your horseshit you learned about tongues or biases. It's all wrong anyways.